The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
In today's interview, we continue our week of coverage of the controversial new Vancouver Police Department unit. They say is in response to a self-commissioned survey of 700 residents that said that people were increasingly concerned about public safety and crime in their neighborhoods around the city. But advocates have said this is actually a policy designed to target legal activities such as drug use in public and homelessness, which are the result of systemic problems and mental health issues, not the result of criminality. Here now, we are talking to the Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users board member and Western Aboriginal Harm Reduction Network director, Flora Monroe. She is a member of the Missipawatuk Cree Nation in Manitoba and has been involved for several years in advocating for drug policy reform.
Flora, thank you so much for joining us on The Pulse here. Great to meet you.
Hi.
So you're part of this complaint filed against the Vancouver Police Department. They only just announced this new street disorder squad last week. It's very fast. Tell me what you thought when you heard about the police creating a squad for mischief and suspicious behavior in neighbors.
I was just like, oh my effing God, like what kind of BS unit is this?
Why did you think it was BS?
Because they didn't say what it was for. Yeah, but if you, like, we had a kind of like a little information of it, of what was going on, and I'm just like, you've got to be freaking kidding me. It's like, just when they said, like, you know, oh, little bit of, like, drugs isn't going to charge anybody, it's like, now they're turning around and saying they're doing this again, and I'm like, what the hell?
Why do you think that they announced this now?
Probably, well, I don't know, it's hard to say, like, you know, with COVID here, it's just like, there isn't much anybody can do. It's like, in accordance to, like, you know, law breaking or anything. So I guess they're just trying to come with some stupid ass reason just to charge, like, you know, the poor, the homeless, the addicts, like just ways of trying to find some way to do something to them instead of like trying to help them.
Now, the police said it's for suspicious behavior, mischief, low priority calls. What is it that makes you feel like this is aimed at people who use drugs and homeless people in particular?
Because that's all they're, like, that's what they're looking at, suspicious behavior, with, you know, mischief. Like, not everybody does that. Everybody, like, you know, everybody knows, like, you know, poor, like, you know, the homeless and the addicts are always going to be suspicious because they don't trust the cops. And, of course, like, you know, their attitude towards them isn't going to be, like, you know, a positive thing. And this just makes it worse.
It sounds like it's breached some of what little trust there might have been.
You mentioned the police
had said they don't want to enforce possession laws anymore, and our own police chief said that he wants Canada to decriminalize possession.
Yeah, and this is what's bringing it back again. Their so-called little unit. Like, you know, with the 300 plus millions that they're putting towards this, you can house these people with that money, and you can minimize the amount of criminal activities that are going on by housing them, because the only way these people get, like, you know, get by downtown is to having to sell drugs or even just to get by for a night from freezing to death.
So the criminalization of drugs is actually kind of driving this basic issue, it sounds like.
Yeah, basically, yeah, it is.
Do you think that this is because of some of the neighborhood protests about the tent city and about drug use in Yale Town and that kind of stuff, or is this about
especially about tent city? That's always been the number one priority of everybody's hit list is tent city.
Why do you think that is?
Because, like, you know, they don't want to see people living like that, or they don't want them in their area, basically. Like, you know, they don't want any, like, negative-looking stuff around their neighborhood. And it's just like, well, what do you expect? If mayor and council don't want to house them, the provinces want to house them, where else are they going to go? What else are you going to do with them? So they'll come up with something to try, and it's just going to, like, you know, what are you going to do? Throw them in jail? And that's only going to cover it up for a little while until they're out again, and it's going to be the same thing.
It's interesting that so many people that talk about this in Vancouver seem like the same people who complain about how much money is spent in the downtown east side on healthcare programs and harm reduction. But when it leaves the downtown east side, they're also unhappy.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody's ever going to be happy with anything at all. That's the thing. It's just like one person, like, you know, trying to help, while other, like, you know, you got like 5 to 10 people trying to help, and you've got 30 people trying to go against you, and it's just like, where is this going to end? Like, where is this medium ever going to be? Like, it's just a never-ending thing. You guys can, like, you know, any, like, not to put down mayor council, but any fucking idiot can know that housing these people is going to help alleviate so much of the problems. Like, what part of it do they not get? Like, as long as they're homeless, how else do you think they're going to, like, to get by?
We talk about the impact of this neighborhood response team from the police. What do you think the impact is going to be on Indigenous people, especially those who are homeless?
A big negative impact. It's just going to be awful.
Why do you feel that? You mentioned about how the police have behaved before.
Well, this gives them an even more force of, like, harassment, bullying. You know, the gang of blue is going to be the biggest bullies now, more than ever. Because with this unit, it's just going to give them more of that emphasis of, like, oh, well, we can harass you all we want.
I'm going to read a bit from your complaint to the police department filed just today, Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Issues of street disorder and public nuisance are demonstrably linked to systemic inequities, including poverty, colonialism, racism, and structural stigma, and contribute to criminalization of people who rely on public place and people who use substances. Tell me more about that statement. What does that mean to you?
Well, it means they're targeting the people because of the substance abuse, the, like, you know, not having what people think of what society should be, but, oh, God, there's, like, there's so many ways you could see this, and it's all negative, like, picking on, like, you know, but colonialism has always been there, and it's always going to be there.
Can you talk about the overdose crisis?
It's always war
person?
On the poor. War on the poor, that's all I see.
Can you talk about the overdose crisis and Indigenous people? Because I know that we've seen some really, really devastating statistics. There's been, for instance, a 93% increase over a year in deaths among First Nations. And I know that women in particular are the worst hit among any group in society, Indigenous women.
Yeah, it is. Because you know what? The society is just like, Native women have always been picked on in accordance with even their children. Like, you know, you have a white family that may live, like, in, say, a two-bedroom. There's the mom, the father, and maybe three kids. It's perfect for them. Like, you know, it's fine that they live in a place like that. But you get an Aboriginal person that has, like, three or four kids, a single mom, living in a two-bedroom, which is not acceptable to the way child and family sees it. So they apprehend the kids. And it's just like, why is one race more better than the other? Like, you know, is it because it's so easily targeted for Aboriginal people to have their kids taken from them and there's nobody there to fight for them or be able to stand up for them or to even stand up for themselves? there's never a two-way street with that. It's just a constant them being stigmatized of just because that was the people. It's just, you know, we've never had any problems with, you know, like if you take our history of our people, it's just like we love having our kids with us close. Like even me for myself, I had my kids apprehended. We went to go see a psychologist, and the psychologist said that was not normal behavior for my 9-10 year old to come and sleep with me in my bed. It was just like that, like, you know, that's not right. And I'm like, what the hell? Why is it
I'm
not
right?
I'm
so sorry
right?
to hear that. That's
yeah,
awful.
It really screwed up my kids, like my boy's head with that, and thinking, what are they thinking? Are they thinking that there's something wrong? And I'm like, no. I'm like, I don't know. I'm just like, you know what? They just don't understand how Aboriginal people like live. They like having their kids close to them. I said, we're not like the normal like white family where they have their room on one side and the kids' bedrooms are way on the other side.
Mm-hmm. You know, this reminds me of a human rights case that I was reporting on earlier this year,
mm-hmm.
Of a mother who couldn't get her kids back because she took them grocery shopping and cooked with them. And they said normal parents have all the food prepared by themselves or someone else before their children arrive. You're not allowed to take them to the store and show them healthy food to eat.
Oh, my Lord. See, that's what I mean. It's like, what's normal for white society is not, like, it's not the norm for Aboriginal people. Like, for us, it's like, that's how we're taught. That's how we're taught to cook, to clean, by having our, like, you know, our moms teach us this or our fathers teaching us things like that. And it's more like a hands-on thing. So, like, you know, like, when I was growing up, I used to watch my granny doing, like, you know, doing the hide, and I'd be there to helping her. Like, for anybody, it would probably look like, because the tools that she would be using wouldn't be appropriate, like, for me. But this is just the way of how we're taught how to do things, so that when, as we grow up, we learn these things. So it's just like, I don't get why one family to another could be so, like, you know, learn our culture, learn what we're about. Don't go pushing, like, you know, your way of life with ours.
Now, I understand you're Cree. What First Nation are you from originally?
Mississippi Cree Nation, Manitoba.
In Manitoba. So, I mean, what you're discussing here is so much a bigger system picture than just one police squad. You're talking about the foster care system and overdose epidemic and health and housing. These issues seem much bigger than one police squad could ever possibly tackle or should tackle.
Yeah, it's like they keep trying to, but all they keep doing is the negative impact on everything, because it's the police that start off everything, and then it connects to everybody else on how, yeah, just the white man's way of life is not how we like to be identified as who we are and to live our lives the way we see. It's like, and it's just like you're trying to take away our culture, our way of life, which isn't how we. Like, this is not how I want to raise my kids. I want them to be raised, like, you know, with a tradition, to knowing our language, to living the way we, like, you know, how we were brought up. But that's not acceptable in white man society, because it's just got to be this way. But, yeah, it's the police that starts that off, because if they can't get to you one way, they'll find another way to get to you, like with, the caring agencies, or so-called funny caring agencies, by going there, phoning them when they see that, like, you know, they're living in such, like, you know, a small place and there's so many of them, or because it's like what you said, like, you know, that the news you covered, how the mother took her kids shopping and cooking with them, and it's just like, you know, and it all starts from the cops all the time. Because if they can't get to you one way, they'll find another way to get to you and then try and bring you down.
If you had anything you could say to the Vancouver Police Department right now, what would it be? What would you tell them that they should do instead of this squad?
Take the time to get to know the culture. Then you can understand the people. And then you can understand where they come from and how they see life. Like, you know, because we're always with the one that we live positive. Like, we give, like, you know, we try and find the best of everybody and not, like, you know, criticize. But then it gets to the point where you can't. It's just like, stop and take the time to learn the culture. Then you'll have a better understanding of how we are.
Mm.
Instead of being forced to the force of colonialism.
How did it feel to file this complaint and to work with Pivot? It seems like it was pretty fast.
I love it.
Yeah.
Myself.
You feel like you can make a difference?
Well, if people take the time to have open mind and understand, well, yeah, I believe it can happen. That's all I ask for a lot of people is be open-minded.
How long have you been involved in WARS and VANDU, and what keeps you going?
I've been with them 5 years, I believe. Almost 5 years or 5, 6 years. What keeps me going is my people, seeing them the way they are. It's like, this is not right. It's the 21st century. This is not the way it should be. But why is it that we're always being the ones forced down, like, you know? So I was like, start using our mouths, start using our minds. If that's the way it's going to be, then it's like, you know, we have to start fighting back. We have to fight back for our rights. We have to fight back just to be who we are, just to live our lives being natives or having that right.
Has it changed you, do you think, Flora, to be part of WARS in particular and to kind of be able to do that fight with other people?
Well, actually, I've always had my mind on things like this, that just that now being with them here brings it a lot better. Now I can actually speak instead of always being behind somebody and trying to change things, but it's just wasn't getting anywhere. But here, oh, heck yeah, I love it. I love the, like, you know, anything I could do to help my people, I love it. I'm there 100%.
I guess my last question for you, Flora, is just, you know, instead of putting this money towards this police squad, what would you like to see that same money be put towards instead? What would actually help for drug users and for the Downtown East Side?
Housing and education. There's a lot of people here that, like, you know, their education was never given, like, you know, to get higher education. Give them a chance, give them homes, educate them, let them go, like, you know, off to school, give them a trade.
Anything else you'd like to tell our listeners?
Yeah. Don't be so, like, blind to see, like, you know, their drug users are capable of working regardless of having an addiction. You see, like, you know, we, as being addicted, like, you know, it's not the fact that we're not functional. We can still work. We can still do things. But with a better education, we can get higher up. But then again, like, if you're a drug user, it's a stigma that this is always the negative.
Well, I'm glad that you found WARS and are able to do this fight, and all the work that you do, I'm sure a lot of people appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, you'll be seeing and hearing a lot from me.
Well, you have a great afternoon, and take care, stay healthy.
You too.
Bye-bye.
And that was Flora Monroe. She's on the board of directors of the Western Aboriginal Harm Reduction Network and VANDU, the Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.